beneath my roof. He has eaten of my bread and salt. I will not do him harm. No. We will travel to the water gardens, where he will hear Messala's story, and send a raven to his queen. The girl will ask him to hunt down the man who hurt her. If he is a man I judge, Swan will not be able to refuse. Obara, you will lead him to High Hermitage to beard Darkstar in his den. The time has not yet come for Dawn to openly defy the Iron Throne, so we must needs return Messala to her mother. But I will not be accompanying her. That task will be yours, Nymeria. The Lannisters will not like it, no more than they liked it when I sent them over it, but they dare not refuse. We need a voice in council, an heir at court. Be careful, though. King's Landing is a pit of snakes. Lady Nym smiled. Why, uncle, I love snakes. And what of me? Asked Tyene. Your mother was a scepter. Oberyn once told me that she read to you in the cradle from the seven-pointed star. I want you in King's Landing, too, but on the other hill. The swords and the stars have been reformed, and this new High Septon is not the puppet that the others were. Try and get close to him. Why not? White suits my colouring. I look so pure. Good, the prince said. Good. He hesitated. If certain things should come to pass, I will send word to each of you. Things can change quickly in the Game of Thrones. I know you will not fail us, cousins. Arianne went to each of them in turn, took their hands, kissed them lightly on the lips. Obara, so fierce. Nymeria, my sister. Tyene, sweetling. I love you all. The Son of Dawn goes with you. Unbowed, unbent, unbroken, the Sand Snakes said together. Princess Arianne lingered when her cousins had departed. Arya Hotar remained as well, as was his place. They are their father's daughters, the prince said. The little princess smiled.
Three Oberons with teats.
Prince Doran laughed. It had been so long since Hotar last heard him laugh. He had almost forgotten what it sounded like.
I still say it should be me who goes to King's Landing, not Lady Nym,
Arianne said.
It is too dangerous. You are my heir, the future of Dawn. Your place is by my side. Soon enough you'll have another task. That last part, about the message, have you had tidings?
Prince Doran shared his secret smile with her. From Lys, a great fleet has put in there to take on water, Volantine ships chiefly, carrying an army. No word as to who they are or where they might be bound. There was talk of elephants.
No dragons.
Elephants. Easy enough to hide a young dragon in a big cog's hole, though. Daenerys is most vulnerable at sea. If I were her, I would keep myself and my intentions hidden as long as I could, so I might take King's Landing unawares.
Do you think Quentin will be with them?
He could be, or not. We will know by where they land, if Westeros is indeed their destination. Quentin will bring her up the green blood, if he can. But it does no good to speak of it. Kiss me. We leave for the water gardens at first light.
We may depart by midday, then, Hotar thought.
Later, when Arianne had gone, he put down his long axe and lifted Prince Doran into his bed. Until the mountain crushed my brother's skull, no Dornishman had died in this war of the Five Kings, the prince murmured softly, as Hotar pulled a blanket over him.
Tell me, Captain, is that my shame or my glory? That is not for me to say, my prince. Serve, protect, obey. simple vows for simple men.
That was all he knew. John. Val waited by the gate in the pre-dawn cold, wrapped up in a bearskin cloak so large it might well have fit Sam. Beside her was a Garan, saddled and bridled, a shaggy grey with one white eye. Molly and Dolores Ed stood with her, a pair of unlikely guards, their breath frosted in the cold black air. "You gave her a blind horse?" John said, incredulous.
"He's only half blind, my lord," offered Molly. "Elsewise, he's sound enough."
He patted the Garan on the neck.
"The horse may be half blind, but I am not," said Val. "I know where I must go."
"My lady, you do not have to do this. The risk
is mine, Lord Snow, and I am no southern lady, but a woman of the free folk. I know the forest better than all your black-cloaked rangers. It holds no ghosts for me."
"I hope not." John was counting on that, trusting that Val could succeed where Black Jack Bulwer and his companions had failed. She need fear no harm from the free folk, he hoped. But both of them knew too well that wildlings were not the only ones waiting in the woods. "You have sufficient food?"
"Hard bread, hard cheese, oat cakes, salt cod, salt beef, salt mutton, and a skin of sweet wine to rinse all that salt out of my mouth. I will not die of hunger."
"Then it's time you were away."
"You have my word, Lord Snow. I will return, with Tormund or without him."
Val glanced at the sky. The moon was but half full.
"Look for me on the first day of the full moon."
"I will. Do not fail me," he thought, "or Stannis will have my head." "Do I have your word that you will keep our princess closely?" the king had said, and John had promised that he would. "Val is no princess, though. I told him that 50 times. It was a feeble sort of evasion, a sad rag wrapped around his wounded word. His father would never have approved. "I am the sword that guards the realm of men," John reminded himself, "and in the end, that must be worth more than one man's honor." The road beneath the wall was as dark and cold as the belly of an ice dragon, and as twisty as a serpent. Dolores Ed led them through with a torch in hand. Molly had the keys for the three gates, where bars of black iron, as thick as a man's arm, closed off the passage. Spearmen at each gate knuckled their foreheads at Jon Snow, but stared openly at Val and her Garan. When they emerged north of the wall, through a thick door made of freshly hewn green wood, the wildling princess paused for a moment to gaze out across the snow-covered field where King Stannis had won his battle. Beyond, the haunted forest waited, dark and silent. The light of the half-moon turned Val's honey-blonde hair a pale silver, and her cheeks as white as snow. She took a deep breath. "The air tastes sweet. My tongue is too numb to tell. All I can taste is cold."
"Cold?" Val laughed lightly. "No, when it is cold, it will hurt to breathe. When the others come..."
The thought was a disquieting one. 6 of the rangers John had sent out were still missing. It is too soon. They may yet be back. But another part of him insisted, "They are dead, every man of them. You sent them out to die, and you are doing the same to Val. Tell Tormund what I've said."
"He may not heed your words, but he will hear them."
Val kissed him lightly on the cheek.
"You have my thanks, Lord Snow, for the half-blind horse, the salt cod, the free air, for hope."
Their breath mingled, a white mist in the air. Jon Snow drew back and said, "The only thanks I want is Tormund Giantsbane, aye?" Val pulled up the hood of her bearskin. The brown pelt was well salted with grey. "Before I go,
One question. Did you kill Jarl, my lord?
The wall killed Jarl.
So I'd heard, but I had to be sure.
You have my word. I did not kill him. Though I might have, if things had gone otherwise.
This is farewell, then, she said almost playfully. Jon Snow was in no mood for it. It is too cold and dark to play, and the hour is too late. Only for a time you will return, for the boy, if for no other reason.
Craster's son, Val shrugged. He is no kin to me.
I've heard you singing to him.
I was singing to myself. Am I to blame if he listens?
A faint smile brushed her lips.
It makes him laugh. Oh, very well. He is a sweet little monster.
Monster?
His milk name. I had to call him something. See that he stays safe and warm, for his mother's sake and mine, and keep him away from the Red Woman. She knows who he is. She sees things in her fires.
Arya, he thought, hoping it was so. Ashes and cinders. Kings and dragons.
Dragons again. For a moment John could almost see them too, coiling in the night, their dark wings outlined against a sea of flame. If she knew, she would have taken the boy away from us. Darla's boy, not your monster. A word in the king's ear would have been the end of it. End of me. Stannis would have taken it for treason. Why let it happen if she knew?
Because it suited her. Fire is a fickle thing. No one knows which way a flame will go.
Val put a foot into a stirrup, swung her leg over a horse's back, and looked down from the saddle.
Do you remember what my sister told you?
Yes.
A sword without a hilt, with no safe way to hold it. But Melisandre had the right of it. Even a sword without a hilt is better than an empty hand when foes are all around you.
Good. Val wheeled the Garan towards the north.
The first night of the full moon, then.
John watched her ride away, wondering if he would ever see her face again.
I'm no southern lady, he could hear her say, but a woman of the free folk.
I don't care what she says, muttered Dolorous Ed as Val vanished behind a stand of soldier pines.
The air is so cold, it hurts to breathe. I would stop, but that would hurt worse.
He rubbed his hands together.
This is going to end badly.
You say that of everything.
Aye, my lord, usually I'm right.
Molly cleared his throat.
My lord, the wildling princess, letting her go. The men may say that I am half a wildling myself. A turncloak, who means to sell the realm to our raiders, cannibals, and giants.
John did not need to stare into a fire to know what was being said of him. The worst part was, they were not wrong, not wholly. Words are wind, and the wind is always blowing at the wall. Come. It was still dark when John returned to his chambers behind the armory. Ghost was not yet back, he saw. Still hunting. The big white direwolf was gone more oft than not of late, ranging farther and farther in search of prey. Between the men of the watch and the wildlings down in Molestown, the hills and fields near Castle Black had been hunted clean, and there had been little enough game to begin with.
Winter is coming, John reflected, and soon, too soon. He wondered if they would ever see a spring.
Dolorous Ed made the trek to the kitchens, and soon was back with a tankard of brown ale and a covered platter. Under the lid, John discovered three duck's eggs fried in drippings, a strip of bacon, two sausages, a blood pudding, and half a loaf of bread, still warm from the oven. He ate the bread and half an egg. He would have eaten the bacon, too, but the raven made off with it before he had the chance.
Thief!
John said, as the bird flapped up to the lintel above the door to devour its prize.
Thief!
the raven agreed. John tried a bite of sausage. He was washing the taste from his mouth with a sip of ale when Ed returned to tell him Bowen Marsh was without.
"What hell's with him? And Septon Celador."
That was quick. He wondered who was telling tales, and if there was more than one.
"Send them in." "Aye, my lord. You'll want to watch your sausages with this lot, though. They have a hungry look about them."
Hungry was not the word John would have used. Septon Celador appeared confused and groggy, and in dire need of some scales from the dragon that had flamed him, whilst first builder, Othel Yarwick, looked as if he'd swallowed something he could not quite digest. Bowen Marsh was angry. John could see it in his eyes, the tightness around his mouth, the flush to those round cheeks. That red is not from cold.
"Please sit," he said. "May I offer you food or drink?"
"We broke our fast in the commons," said Marsh. "I could do with more." Yarwick eased himself down onto a chair. "Good of you to offer." "Perhaps some wine?" said Septon Celador.
"Corn!" screamed the raven from the lintel. "Corn! Corn!"
"Wine for the Septon, and a plate for our first builder," John told Dolorous Ed. "Nothing for the bird." He turned back to his visitors. "You are here about Val?"
"And other matters," said Bowen Marsh. "The men have concerns, my lord."
"And who is it who appointed you to speak for them?"
"As do I, Othel. How goes the work at the Night Fort? I have had a letter from Sir Axel Florent, who styles himself the Queen's Hand. He tells me that Queen Selyse is not pleased with her quarters at Eastwatch by the Sea, and wishes to move into her husband's new seat at once.
Will that be possible?"
Yarwick shrugged. "We've got most of the keep restored and put a roof back on the kitchens. She'd need food and furnishings and firewood, mind you, but it might serve. Not so many comforts as Eastwatch, to be sure, and a long way from the ships, should Her Grace wish to leave us, but she could live there, though it will be years before the place looks a proper castle. Sooner if I had more builders."
"I could offer you a giant."
That gave Othel a start. "The monster in the yard? His name is Wanweg Wandawong, Leathers tells me. A lot to wrap a tongue around, I know. Leathers calls him Wanwan, and that seems to serve. Wanwan was very little like the giants in old Nan's tales, those huge savage creatures who mix blood into their morning porridge and devoured whole bulls, hair and hide and horns. This giant ate no meat at all, though he was a holy terror when served a basket of roots, crunching onions and turnips, and even raw hard neeps between his big square teeth. He is a willing worker, though getting him to understand what you want is not always easy. He speaks the old tongue after a fashion, but nothing of the common. Tireless, though, and his strength is prodigious. He could do the work of a dozen men.
My lord, the men would never. Giants eat human flesh, I think. No, my lord, I thank you, but I do not have the men to watch over such a creature.
John Snow was unsurprised. "As you wish. We will keep the giant here. Truth be told, he would have been loath to part with one. "You know nothing, John Snow," a grit might say. But John spoke with the giant whenever he could, through Leathers, or one of the free folk they had brought back from the grove, and was learning much and more about his people and their history. He only wished that Sam was here to write the stories down. That was not to say that he was blind to the danger one represented. The giant would lash out violently when threatened, and those huge hands were strong enough to rip a man apart. He reminded John of Hodor. Hodor twice as big, twice as strong, and half as clever. There's a thought to sober even Septon Celador. But if Tormund's had giants with him,
one wed one Darwan, may help us treat for them. Mormon's raven muttered his annoyance as the door opened beneath him, heralding the return of Dolorous Ed with a flagon of wine and a plate of eggs and sausages. Burnmarsh waited with obvious impatience as Ed poured, resuming only when he left again. Tullet is a good man and well-liked, and Aaron Emmett has been a fine master at arms, he said then. Yet the talk is that you mean to send them away.
We need good men at Long Barrow.
Whore's Hole, the men have started calling it, said Marsh. But be that as it may, is it true that you mean to replace Emmett with the Savage Leathers as our master at arms? That is an office most often reserved for knights, or rangers at the least.
Leathers is savage, John agreed mildly. I can attest to that. I've tried him in the practice yard. He's as dangerous with a stone axe as most knights are with castle-forged steel. I grant you he's not as patient as I'd like, and some of the boys are terrified of him. But that's not all for the bad. One day they'll find themselves in a real fight, and a certain familiarity with terror will serve them well.
He's a wildling.
He was, until he said the words. Now he is our brother, one who can teach the boys more than swordcraft. It would not hurt them to learn a few words of the old tongue, and something of the ways of the free folk.
Free,
the raven muttered.
Corn, king.
The men do not trust him.
Which men, John might have asked. How many? But that would lead him down a road he did not mean to ride.
I'm sorry to hear that. Is there more?
Septon Selador spoke up. This boy, Satin, it said you mean to make him your steward and squire in Tollett's place.
My lord, the boy's a whore. Dare I say, a painted catamite from the brothels of Old Town?
And you are a drunk.
What he was in Old Town is none of our concern. He's quick to learn and very clever. The other recruits started out despising him, but he won them over and made friends of them all. He's fearless in a fight, and can even read and write after a fashion. He should be capable of fetching me my meals and saddling my horse, don't you think?
Most like, said Burnmarsh, stony-faced. But the men do not like it. Traditionally, the Lord Commander's squires are lads of good birth, being groomed for command. Does my lord believe the men of the Night's Watch would ever follow a whore into battle?
John's temper flashed. They have followed worse. The old bear left a few cautionary notes about certain of the men for his successor. We have a cook at the Shadow Tower who was fond of raping scepters. He burned a seven-pointed star into his flesh for everyone he claimed. His left arm is stars from wrist to elbow, and stars mark his calves as well. At Eastwatch, we have a man who set his father's house afire and barred the door. His entire family burned to death, all nine. Whatever Saturn may have done in Old Town, he is our brother now, and he will be my squire.
Septon Selador drank some wine. Othel Yarwick stabbed a sausage with his dagger. Bowen Marsh sat red-faced. The raven flapped his wings and said,
Court! Court! Kill!
Finally, the Lord Steward cleared his throat.
Your lordship knows best, I'm sure. Might I ask about these corpses in the ice cells? They make the men uneasy, and to keep them under guard. Surely that is a waste of two good men, unless you fear that they...
will rise? I pray they do.
Septon Selador paled.
Seven save us!
Wine dribbled down his chin in a red line.
Lord Commander, whites are monstrous, unnatural creatures, abominations before the eyes of the gods. You cannot mean to try to talk with them?
Can they talk? Asked Jon Snow. I think not, but I cannot claim to know. Monsters they may be, but they were men before they died.
How much remains? The one I slew was intent on killing Lord Commander Mormont. Plainly, it remembered who he was and where to find him. Maester Aemon would have grasped his purpose, John did not doubt. Sam Tarly would have been terrified, but he would have understood as well. My lord father used to tell me that a man must know his enemies. We understand little of the whites, and less about the others. We need to learn. That answer did not please them. Septon Selador fingered the crystal that hung about his neck and said, I think this most unwise, Lord Snow. I shall pray to the crone to lift her shining lamp and lead you down the path of wisdom. Jon Snow's patience was exhausted. We could all do with a bit more wisdom, I'm sure. You know nothing, Jon Snow. Now, shall we speak of Val?
It is true, then, said Marsh. You have released her.
Beyond the wall.
Septon Selador sucked in his breath.
The king's prize? His grace will be most wroth to find her gone. Val will return. Before Stannis, if the gods are good.
Well, how can you know that?
Demanded Bowen Marsh. She said she would.
And if she lied, if she meets with misadventure?
Why then, you may have a chance to choose a Lord Commander more to your liking. Until such time, I fear you'll still need to suffer me. John took a swallow of ale. I sent her to find Tormund Giantsbane and bring him my offer.
If we may know, what offer is this?
The same offer I made at Molestown, food and shelter and peace. If he will join his strength to ours, fight our common enemy, help us hold the wall. Bowen Marsh did not appear surprised.
You mean to let him pass?
His voice suggested he had known all along.
To open the gates for him and his followers, hundreds, thousands.
If he has that many left. Septon Selador made the sign of the star. Othel Yarwick grunted. Bowen Marsh said,
Some might call this treason. These are wildlings, savages, raiders, reapers, more beasts than man.
Tormund is none of those things, said John, no more than Mance Rayder. But even if every word you said were true, they are still men, Bowen. Living men, human as you and me. Winter is coming, my lords, and when it does, we living men will need to stand together against the dead.
Snow!
Screamed Lord Mormont's raven.
Snow! Snow!
John ignored him. We have been questioning the wildlings we brought back from the grove. Several of them told an interesting tale of a woods witch called Mother Mole.
Mother Mole? Said Bowen Marsh. An unlikely name.
Supposedly she made her home in a burrow beneath a hollow tree. Whatever the truth of that, she had a vision of a fleet of ships arriving to carry the free folk to safety across the narrow sea. Thousands of those who fled the battle were desperate enough to believe her. Mother Mole has led them all to Hardhome, there to pray and await salvation from across the sea. Athel Yarwick scowled. I'm no ranger, but Hardhome is an unholy place, it said. Cursed! Even your uncle used to say as much, Lord Snow. Why would they go there? John had a map before him on the table. He turned it so they could see. Hardhome sits on a sheltered bay and has a natural harbour deep enough for the bigger ships afloat. Wood and stone are plentiful near there. The waters teem with fish, and there are colonies of seals and sea cows close at hand. All that's true, I don't doubt, said Yarwick, but it's not a place I'd want to spend a night. You know the tale. He did. Hardhome had been halfway toward becoming a town, the only true town north of the wall, until the night, 600 years ago, when hell had swallowed it. Its people had been carried off into slavery or slaughtered for meat, depending on which version of the tale you believed, their homes and halls consumed in a conflagration that burned so hot that watchers on the wall far to the south had thought the sun was rising in the north. Afterward, ashes rained down on haunted forest and shivering sea alike for almost half a year. Traders reported finding only nightmarish devastation where Hardhome had stood. A landscape of charred trees and burned bones. Waters choked with swollen corpses. Blood-chilling shrieks echoing from the cave mouth that pocked the great cliff that loomed above the settlement. 6 centuries had come and gone since that night, but Hardhome was still shunned. The wild had reclaimed the site, John had been told, but rangers claimed that the overgrown ruins were haunted by ghouls and demons, and burning ghosts with an unhealthy taste for blood. "It is not the sort of refuge I'd choose either," John said. But Mother Mole was heard to preach that the free folk would find salvation where once they found damnation. Septon Celador pursed his lips.
"Salvation can be found only through the Seven. This witch has doomed them all." "And saved the wall, mayhaps," said Bowen Marsh. "These are enemies we speak of. Let them pray amongst the ruins, and if their god sends ships to carry them off to a better world, well and good. In this world I have no food to feed them."
John flexed the fingers of his sword hand. Cutter Pike's galleys sail past Hardhome from time to time. He tells me there is no shelter there but the caves. The Screaming Caves, his men call them. Mother Mole and those who followed her will perish there, of cold and starvation, hundreds of them, thousands.
Ah, thousands of enemies, thousands of wildlings.
Thousands of people, John thought. Men, women, children. Anger rose inside him. But when he spoke, his voice was quiet and cold. "Are you so blind? Or is it that you do not wish to see? What do you think will happen when all these enemies are dead?" Above the door, the raven muttered,
"Dead! Dead! Dead!"
"Let me tell you what will happen," John said. "The dead will rise again, in their hundreds and their thousands. They will rise as whites, with black hands and pale blue eyes. And they will come for us." He pushed himself to his feet, the fingers of his sword hand opening and closing. "You have my leave to go." Septon Celador rose, grey-faced and sweating. Othel Yarvik stiffly. Bowen Marsh tight-lipped and pale.
"I thank you for your time, Lord Snow."
They left without another word. Tyrion. The sow had a sweeter temper than some horses he had ridden. Patient and sure-footed, she accepted Tyrion with hardly a squeal when he clambered onto her back and remained motionless as he reached for shield and lance. Yet when he gathered up her reins and pressed his feet into her side, she moved at once. Her name was Pretty, short for Pretty Pig, and she had been trained to saddle and bridle since she was a piglet. The painted wooden armour clattered as Pretty trotted across the deck. Tyrion's armpits were prickly with perspiration, and a bead of sweat was trickling down his scar beneath the oversized, ill-fitting helm. Yet for one absurd moment he felt almost like Jaime, riding out onto a tawny field with lance in hand, his golden armour flashing in the sun. When the laughter began, the dream dissolved. He was no champion, just a dwarf on a pig, clutching a stick, capering for the amusement of some restless, rum-soaked sailors in hopes of sweetening their mood. Somewhere down in hell, His father was seething, and Joffrey was chuckling. Tyrion could feel their cold, dead eyes watching this mama's farce, as avid as the crew of the Selassori Coran. And now here came his foe. Penny rode her big grey dog, her striped lance waving drunkenly as the beast bounded across the deck. Her shield and armour had been painted red, though the paint was chipped and fading. His own armour was blue. "Not mine, Groat's. Never mine, I pray." Tyrion kicked at Pretty's haunches to speed her to a charge, as the sailors urged him on with hoots and shouts. Whether they were shouting encouragement or mocking him, he could not have said for certain, though he had a fair notion. "Why did I ever allow myself to be talked into this farce?" He knew the answer, though. For 12 days now, the ship had floated becalmed in the gulf of grief. The mood of the crew was ugly, and liked to turn uglier when their daily rum ration went dry. There were only so many hours a man could devote to mending sails, caulking leaks, and fishing. Jorah Mormont had heard them muttering about how dwarf luck had failed them. Whilst the ship's cook still gave Tyrion's head a rub from time to time, in hopes that it might stir a wind, the rest had taken to giving him venomous looks whenever he crossed their paths. Penny's lot was even worse, since the cook had put about the notion that squeezing a dwarf girl's breast might be just the thing to win their luck back. He had also started referring to Pretty Pig as Bacon, a jape that had seemed much funnier when Tyrion had made it.
"We have to make them laugh," Penny had said, pleading. "We have to make them like us. If we give them a show, it will help them forget. Please, my lord."
And somehow, somewise, some way, he had consented. It must have been the rum. The captain's wine had been the first thing to run out. You could get drunk much quicker on rum than on wine, Tyrion Lannister had discovered. So he found himself clad in Groat's painted wooden armour, astride Groat's sow, whilst Groat's sister instructed him in the finer points of the mummer's joust that had been their bread and salt. It had a certain delicious irony to it, considering that Tyrion had almost lost his head once by refusing to mount the dog for his nephew's twisted amusement. Yet somehow he found it difficult to appreciate the humour of it all from Sowerback. Penny's lance descended just in time for its blunted point to brush his shoulder. His own lance wobbled as he brought it down and banged it noisily off a corner of her shield. She kept her seat. He lost his. But then he was supposed to. Easy as falling off a pig. Though falling off this particular pig was harder than it looked. Tyrion curled into a ball as he dropped, remembering his lesson. But even so, he hit the deck with a solid thump and bit his tongue so hard he tasted blood. He felt as if he were 12 again, cartwheeling across the supper table in Castle Rock's great hall. Back then, his uncle Geryon had been on hand to praise his efforts in place of surly sailors. Their laughter seemed sparse and strained compared to the great gales that had greeted Groat's and Penny's antics at Joffrey's wedding feast, and some hissed at him in anger.
"No nose, you ride the same way you look. Ugly!" one man shouted from the stern castle. "Must have no balls. That girl beat you."
"He wagered coin on me," Tyrion decided. He let the insult wash right over him. He had heard worse in his time.
The wooden armour made rising awkward. He found himself flailing like a turtle on its back. That at least set a few of the sailors to laughing.
"A shame I did not break my leg. That would have left them howling. And if they had been in that privy when I shot my father through the bowels, they might have laughed hard enough to shit their breeches right along with him. But anything to keep the bloody bastard sweet."
Jorah Mormont
finally took pity on Tyrion's struggles and pulled him to his feet.
"You looked a fool."
"That was the intent. It is hard to look a hero when you're mounted on a pig.
That must be why I stay off pigs."
Tyrion unbuckled his helm, twisted it off, and spat a gobbet of bloody pink phlegm over the side.
"It feels as though I bit through half my tongue." "Next time, bite harder," Ser Jorah shrugged. "Truth be told, I've seen worse justice."
"Was that praise? I fell off the bloody pig and bit my tongue. What could possibly be worse than that?
Getting a splinter through your eye and dying."
Penny had vaulted off her dog, a big grey brute called Crunch.
"The thing is not to joust well, Hugo."
She was always careful to call him Hugo, where anyone might hear.
"The thing is to make them laugh and throw coins."
"Poor payment for the blood and bruises," Tyrion thought. But he kept that to himself as well.
"We failed at that as well.
No one threw coins. Not a penny, not a groat."
"They will when we get better." Penny pulled off her helm. Mass brown hair spilled down to her ears.
Her eyes were brown, too, beneath a heavy shelf of brow, her cheeks smooth and flushed. She pulled some acorns from a leather bag for Pretty Pig. The sow ate them from her hand, squealing happily.
"When we perform for Queen Daenerys, the silver will rain down, you'll see."
Some of the sailors were shouting at them and slamming their heels against the deck, demanding another tilt. The ship's cook was the loudest, as always. Tyrion had learned to despise that man, even if he was the only half-decent Sivers player on the cog.
"You see, they liked us," Penny said, with a hopeful little smile. "Shall we go again, Hugo?"
He was on the point of refusing when a shout from one of the mates spared him the necessity. It was mid-morning, and the captain wanted the boats out again. The cog's huge striped sail hung limply from her mast, as it had for days, but he was hopeful that they could find a wind somewhere to the north. That meant rowing. The boats were small, however, and the cog was large. Towing it was hot, sweaty, exhausting work that left the hands blistered and the back aching and accomplished nothing. The crew hated it. Tyrion could not blame them.
"The widow should have put us on a galley,"
he muttered sourly. "If someone could help me out of these bloody planks, I would be grateful. I think I may have a splinter through my crutch." Mormont did the duty, albeit with poor grace. Penny collected her dog and pig and led them both below.
"You might want to tell your lady to keep her door closed and barred when she's inside," Ser Jorah said, as he was undoing the buckles on the straps that joined the wooden breastplate to the backplate. "I'm hearing too much talk about ribs and hams and bacon."
"That pig is half her livelihood."
"A Giscari crew would eat the dog as well."
Mormont pulled the breastplate and backplate apart.
"Just tell her."
"As you wish." His tunic was soaked with sweat and clinging to his chest. Tyrion plucked at it, wishing for a bit of breeze. The wooden armor was as hot and heavy as it was uncomfortable. Half of it looked to be old paint, layer on layer on layer of it, from 100 past repaintings. At Joffrey's wedding feast, he recalled, one rider had displayed the direwolf of Robb Stark, the other the arms and colors of Stannis Baratheon. "We will need both animals if we are to tilt for Queen Daenerys," he said. If the sailors took it in their heads to butcher Pretty Pig, neither he nor Penny could hope to stop them. But Ser Jorah's longsword might give them pause, at least.
"Is that how you hope to keep your head, imp?"
"Sir Imp, if you please. And yes, once Her Grace knows my true worth, she'll cherish me. I am a lovable little fellow, after all, and I know many useful things about my kin. But until such time, I'd best keep her amused."
"Caper as you like. It won't wash out your crimes.
Daenerys Targaryen is no silly trial to be diverted by japes and tumbles. She will deal with you justly.
Oh, I hope not.
Tyrion studied Mormont with his mismatched eyes.
And how will she welcome you, this just queen? A warm embrace? A girlish titter? A headsman's axe?
He grinned at the knight's obvious discomfort.
Did you truly expect me to believe you were about the queen's business in that whorehouse, defending her from half a world away? Or could it be that you were running, that your dragon queen sent you from her side? But why would she... Oh, wait! You were spying on her!
Tyrion made a clucking sound.
You hope to buy your way back into her favor by presenting her with me. An ill-considered scheme, I'd say. One might even say an act of drunken desperation. Perhaps if I were Jaime. Oh, but Jaime killed her father. I only killed my own. You think Daenerys will execute me and pardon you? But the reverse is just as likely. Maybe you should hop on that pig, Ser Jorah. Put on a suit of iron motley, like Florian the...
The blow the big knight gave him cracked his head around and knocked him sideways. So hard that his head bounced off the deck. Blood filled his mouth as he staggered back onto one knee. He spat out a broken tooth.
Growing prettier every day, but I do believe I poked a wound. Did the dwarf say something to offend you, sir?
Tyrion asked innocently, wiping bubbles of blood off his broken lip with the back of his hand.
I am sick of your mouth, dwarf, said Mormont. You still have a few teeth left. If you want to keep them, stay away from me for the rest of this voyage.
That could be difficult. We share a cabin.
You can find somewhere else to sleep. Down in the hold, up on deck, makes no matter. Just keep out of my sight.
Tyrion pulled himself back to his feet.
As you wish,
he answered, through a mouthful of blood. But the big knight was already gone, his boots pounding on the deck boards. Below in the galley, Tyrion was rinsing out his mouth with rum and water and wincing at the sting when Penny found him.
I heard what happened. Oh, are you hurt?
He shrugged. A bit of blood and a broken tooth. But I believe I hurt him more. And him a knight. Sad to say, I would not count on Ser Jorah should we need protection.
What did you do? Oh, your lip is bleeding.
She slipped a square from her sleeve and dabbed it.
What did you say?
A few truths, Sir Bezor did not care to hear.
You mustn't mock him. Don't you know anything? You can't talk that way to big persons. They can hurt you. Ser Jorah could have tossed you in the sea. The sailors would have laughed to see you drown. You have to be careful around big people. Be jolly and playful with them. Keep them smiling. Make them laugh. That's what my father always said. Didn't your father ever tell you how to act with big people?
My father called them small folk, said Tyrion. And he was not what you'd call a jolly man.
He took another sip of watered rum, slushed it around his mouth, spat it out.
Still, I take your point. I have a deal to learn about being a dwarf. Perhaps you will be good enough to teach me, between the jousting and the pig-riding.
I will, my lord, gladly. But what were these truths? Why did Ser Jorah hit you so hard?
Why, for love, the same reason that I stewed that singer.
He thought of Shay, and the look in her eyes as he tightened the chain about her throat, twisting it in his fist. A chain of golden hands. For hands of gold are always cold, but a woman's hands are warm.
Are you a maid, Penny?
She blushed.
Yes, of course. Who would have...
Stay that way. Love is madness, and lust is poison. Keep your maidenhead. You'll be happier for it, and you're less likely to find yourself in some dingy brothel on the Rhône
with a whore who looks a bit like your lost love? Or chasing across half the world, hoping to find wherever whores go? Sir Jorah dreams of rescuing his dragon queen and basking in her gratitude. But I know a thing or two about the gratitude of kings, and I'd sooner have a palace in Valyria. He broke off suddenly. Did you feel that? The ship moved. It did. Penny's face lit up with joy. We're moving again. The wind. She rushed to the door. I want to see. Come, I'll race you up. Off she went. She is young, Tyrion had to remind himself, as Penny scrambled from the galley and up the steep wooden steps as fast as her short legs would allow. Almost a child. Still, it tickled him to see her excitement. He followed her topside. The sail had come to life again, billowing, emptying, then billowing again, the red stripes on the canvas wriggling like snakes. Sailors dashed across the decks and hauled on lines as the mates bellowed orders in the tongue of old Valentus. The rowers in the ship's boats had loosed their tow ropes and turned back toward the cog, stroking hard. The wind was blowing from the west, swirling and gusting, clutching at ropes and cloaks like a mischievous child. The Celesoria Coran was underway. Might be we'll make Meereen after all, Tyrion thought. But when he clambered up the ladder to the stern castle and looked off from the stern, his smile faltered. Blue sky and blue sea here, but off west, I've never seen a sky that colour. A thick band of clouds ran along the horizon. A bar sinister, he said to Penny, pointing. What does that mean? She asked. It means some big bastard is creeping up behind us. He was surprised to find that Macoro and two of his fiery fingers had joined them on the stern castle. It was only midday, and the Red Priest and his men did not normally emerge till dusk. The priest gave him a solemn nod.
There you see it, Hugo Hill, God's wrath. The Lord of Light will not be mocked.
Tyrion had a bad feeling about this. The widow said this ship would never reach her destination. I took that to mean that once we were out to sea, beyond the reach of Triarchs, the captain would change course for Meereen. Or perhaps that you would seize the ship with your fiery hand and take us to Daenerys. But that isn't what your high priest saw at all, is it?
No.
Makoro's deep voice tolled as solemnly as a funeral bell.
This is what he saw.
The Red Priest lifted his staff and inclined its head toward the west. Penny was lost.
I don't understand. What does it mean?
It means we'd best get below. Sir Jorah has exiled me from our cabin. Might I hide in yours when the time comes?
Yes, she said. You would be... Oh.
For the better part of 3 hours they ran before the wind, as the storm grew closer. The western sky went green, then grey, then black. A wall of dark clouds loomed up behind them, churning like a kettle of milk left on the fire too long. Tyrion and Penny watched from the forecastle, huddled by the figurehead and holding hands, careful to stay out of the way of captain and crew. The last storm had been thrilling, intoxicating, a sudden squall that had left him feeling cleansed and refreshed. This one felt different right from the first. The captain sensed it too. He changed their course to north by northeast to try and get out of the storm's path. It was a futile effort. This storm was too big. The seas around them grew rougher. The wind began to howl. The stinky steward rose and fell as waves smashed against her hull. Behind them, lightning stabbed down from the sky, blinding purple bolts that danced across the sea in webs of light. Thunder followed. "The time has come to aid." Tyrion took Penny by the arm and led her below decks. Pretty and Crunch were both half mad with fear.
The dog was barking, barking, barking. He knocked Tyrion right off his feet as they entered. The sow had been shitting everywhere. Tyrion cleaned it up as best he could, whilst Penny tried to calm the animals. Then they tied down or put away anything that was still loose. "I'm frightened," Penny confessed. The cabin had begun to tilt and jump, going this way and that as the waves hammered at the hull of the ship. "There are worse ways to die than drowning. Your brother learned that, and so did my lord father. And Shay, that lying cunt. Hands of gold are always cold, but a woman's hands are warm." "We should play a game," Tyrion suggested. "That might help take our thoughts off the storm." "Not Syvas," she said at once. "Not Syvas," Tyrion agreed, as the deck rose under him. That would only lead to pieces flying violently across the cabin and raining down on sow and dog. "When you were a little girl, did you ever play Come Into My Castle?" "No. Can you teach me?" "Could he?" Tyrion hesitated. "Fool of a dwarf. Of course she's never played Come Into My Castle. She never had a castle. Come Into My Castle was a game for high-born children, one meant to teach them courtesy, heraldry, and a thing or two about their lord father's friends and foes. That won't—" he started. The deck gave another violent heave, slamming the two of them together. Penny gave a squeak of fright. "That game won't do," Tyrion told her, gritting his teeth. "Sorry, I don't know what game—" "I do." Penny kissed him. It was an awkward kiss, rushed, clumsy, but it took him utterly by surprise. His hands jerked up and grabbed hold of her shoulders to shove her away. Instead, he hesitated, then pulled her closer, gave her a squeeze. Her lips were dry, hard, closed up tighter than a miser's purse. "A small mercy," thought Tyrion. This was nothing he had wanted. He liked Penny. He pitied Penny. He even admired Penny in a way. But he did not desire her. He had no wish to hurt her, though. The guards and his sweet sister had given her enough pain. So he let the kiss go on, holding her gently by the shoulders. His own lips stayed firmly shut. The Selasauri Corran rolled and shuddered around them. Finally, she pulled back an inch or two. Tyrion could see his own reflection shining in her eyes. "Pretty eyes," he thought, but he saw other things as well. A lot of fear, a little hope, but not a bit of lust. She does not want me, no more than I want her. When she lowered her head, he took her under the chin and raised it up again. "We cannot play that game, my lady." Above, the thunder boomed, close at hand now.
I never kissed a boy before, but I only thought, what if we drown and I...
"It was sweet," lied Tyrion. "But I am married. She was with me at the feast. You may remember her, Lady Sansa."
"Was she your wife? She was very beautiful."
"And false. Sansa, Shay, all my women. Tysha was the only one who ever loved me. Where do whores go?"
"A lovely girl," said Tyrion, "and we were joined beneath the eyes of gods and men. It may be that she is lost to me, but until I know that for a certainty, I must be true to her."
"I understand." Penny turned her face away from his. "My perfect woman," Tyrion thought bitterly, "one still young enough to believe such blatant lies." The hull was creaking, the deck moving, and Pretty was squealing in distress. Penny crawled across the cabin floor on her hands and knees, wrapped her arms around the sow's head, and murmured reassurance to her. Looking at the two of them, it was hard to know who was comforting whom. The sight was so grotesque, it should have been hilarious, but Tyrion could not even find a smile. "The girl deserves better than a pig," he thought, "an honest kid."